Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Fresh off the Build conference held earlier this month, lead architect for Windows Server, Jeffrey Snover, Paul Thoreau from Windows IT Pro, and John Hassel from Computer World gathered around for an impromptu conversation around Microsoft's Cloud OS offerings. Tune in as they discuss the latest enhancements made to the server and data center family, as well as how these changes will impact IT pros. Jeffrey, the mic is yours.
Howdy, I'm Jeffrey Snover. I'm a distinguished engineer, and I was the lead architect for Windows Server 2012, and things obviously went pretty well because they've now made me the lead architect for Windows Server and for System Center Data Center. And today I'm joined by Paul and John, and we just spent the last 2 hours talking about the Cloud OS and what the Cloud OS was, and we described how, you know, really the Cloud OS was our vision for where we're going with the company. And, wasn't specifically a product in and of itself, but it was more along the lines of a direction that guides all the products that we have. And in particular, how we talked that a Cloud OS, an operating system, really has two primary purposes. The first is to manage a bunch of hardware resources, and the second is to provide application services to make it easy to build applications. And that Microsoft has done a great job with that, with the focus of being a single server. And now as a Cloud OS, what we're doing is we're taking that, we're expanding the scope and reinterpreting the traditional roles of the OS in the context of a data center. So now instead of managing just a server, we manage all the elements of a data center, the servers, the physical hardware, the networking, the storage, and then the application servers are now cloud scale application services. So we spent about 2 hours trying to, you know, joke around, explain things with lots of analogies and such, and we had some smart guys from all around the company explain that. So did any of that make any sense?
Well, you really put us on the spot. 2 hours into it, no, unfortunately. No, it makes a lot of sense, obviously. I mean, I love the scale aspect of it, the notion of taking stuff up and putting it into a multi-server management model, which is great, but I think the best part of it is the virtuous cycle that I think you brought up, which is the notion that these things impact each other, that obviously there are learnings from server that go up into Azure, and on the flip side, there are learnings not from Azure that come back into server as well, and you get that whole virtuous cycle there.
So. Yeah, I agree. The most interesting part for me, I think, was the fact that customers that would have no chance of growing into some, you know, scale of Azure, but now get to benefit from the things that, that Microsoft and other partners are learning and integrating into the server itself. Those are really, you know, interesting improvements and things that those companies can benefit from that really, you know, otherwise they would not ever have a chance to grow into and realize.
Yeah, you know, I was telling them that, you know, when we talk about this virtuous cycle, a lot of the times we talk about the really big things, you know, scalability and the ability to manage, you know, the storage and the networking, et cetera. But that one of the things that excites me the most is stuff we don't really talk about. And that is, hey, when you run your own service and something goes wrong and there's a crummy error message or an event log full of stuff that you say, what's this? Boy, that's a real difficult thing. And so running our own services, you know, we're kind of stepping on our own rakes, you know, getting hit in the face, and then that's using, we're using that to improve the error messages. And that helps everybody, whether you're running a cloud service where it really matters because those little things times 10,000 servers, you know, it's really painful. But even if you're running your own server, we're just, you know, cleaning up.
I used to be that guy, you know, poking the stick through the cage in the colo facility, resetting the MP4 server, right? I mean, that was awful. After, oh, absolutely. After a flight to the place where it was and then a drive out to it.
Sure.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah.
You had a stick?
A stick. Yeah, of course. It was the data, well, it wasn't really, it was a colo facility, yeah. A location facility, but there was a stick for the place so that anyone who came in there could do that if they couldn't get into the
cage. A community stick.
Yeah, yeah. Community stick. So server administration has really evolved over the years, you know, in some ways since those days. And, yeah.
That is definitely awesome.
Yeah, no, it wasn't awesome, but it's certainly gotten better.
So as you talk to IT pros, what are you hearing from them? What are the challenges they have, and both in general and then as they're adopting Server 2012?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, what I'm hearing most is companies really struggling with where they are in the cloud cycle. You know, are they suited for, you know, evolving into the cloud, or, you know, are they wrestling with that factor of, do I want to give up the control that on-premises gives me?
Right.
What are my options for, you know, deploying a hybrid cloud, and how do I bring, you know, the cloud-esque elements of, you know, Azure or other platforms. How do I bring that down into my data center? You know, how do I get on the train for virtualization and managing, you know, homogeneous servers? Is that something that I can, you know, deploy in my own systems, in my own infrastructure, and realize the benefit there? That's really, you know, it's kind of an identity crisis almost, you know, having trouble figuring out where in this whole, you know, life cycle of the cloud they reside.
Are they able to answer that, or are they struggling still?
2012 helps, obviously, because it brings a lot of the best of both worlds together. But it's a really challenging question, and it's not the same answer for every company. You know, there's different regulatory challenges for each business. There's different control mechanisms that need to happen. And, you know, users are different as well. So it all comes together into, you know, a very unique solution for each business. So
that's an interesting point, that I think as people adopt this cloud stuff or evaluate the cloud stuff, really the proxy, that's all sort of a proxy to what's my value add. You know, is my value add the fact that I can figure out how to design and put together these hardware systems, or is my value add I can run them, or is my value add more along the lines of, hey, I can use these compute resources that somebody else provides me, but I know how to translate them into real business value for my customer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thinking in the past, sort of had to all, you know, there's one answer, you did everything. And now there's the opportunity to kind of specialize.
Sure.
And it gives you the opportunity to answer that.
Sure.
What you following?
So I'd say two things are striking when I talk to people that are actually deploying this stuff or thinking about deploying this stuff. One is the notion of the acceptance of cloud, right? Because this was a semi-controversial term for a while. It was the other Jeff who had kind of given me a nice definition of it a few years back at TechEd, where he said that, you know, basically the cloud was, or private cloud, I guess in this case, was a formalization of things that we had before, but it's the infrastructure plus the management of the infrastructure, which I thought was a nice way of putting it. So we've gotten over that acceptance barrier, and I think that's one aspect of it. The other one is just, and this is where Microsoft's strengths really come into play, where you have a variety of options here, right? You're not saying, look, you have to do public cloud. You don't just have on-prem. You have both, and then you have the hybrid solution, which I think is the really the important bit in some ways, because it gives them the choice to do that stuff, or the ability to do that stuff, because like you were saying earlier, there are regulatory reasons why they need to have stuff on site, perhaps, or, you know, some things could be the public cloud, some can't, and so forth. And so I think that that layer or that amount of choice is what is enabling this stuff to move forward now. And that's what we're finally seeing, mm-hmm. is people actually deploying these things in different ways now.
Wow. So what do you see as the challenges? For somebody who says, hey, I'd like to go raise the public cloud, what do you see as the key challenges for that?
Actually, it's not so much a technology challenge as it is almost a human challenge.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, we were joking earlier about the stick and everything, but it's nice not to get that call at 3 o'clock in the morning to go fix a server. You know, there are companies that their primary business is not serving email, so why are we doing this in-house? And yet, these companies have people who are in the ploy of serving email. And when they hear about cloud, they get nervous because they see this as a threat to their job, you know. We talk a lot at TechEd, you know, about this kind of issue where if you go into IT, you probably went into it knowing that, you know, this is going to evolve. You know, your skill set's going to have to evolve along with it. But it's a tough thing to go out into a place and say, hey, we're going to the cloud, and you see a lot of people like, you know.
Right.
And so even though it's great for the business overall, it is hard to ask people to make a decision that's bad for them, that they perceive as bad for them, right, even though it's going to be good for the company overall.
Yes, Mike, I just was in a conference and I was giving a talk about, you know, the cloud and this transition and then also what it meant to people's careers.
Yeah.
I made the point that, hey, you know, we all invest in our careers and then there's a time where we harvest that investment and we're able to just use that work and kind of relax a little. And then there are times where, you know, even though we think we reinvest all the time, there are times where you really need to step back and reinvest, and this is one of those times.
Yes.
You know, if you wanted a job where you didn't have to do that, you do something else. Like one of my best friends, he's got a job in lumber.
Sure.
I thought to myself, what a great job. Like, when was the last time a new tree came out? I mean, what a great deal that would be.
But isn't that all about, you know, changing IT from a call center to really a driver of real business value? You know, you're taking, you know, the responsibility and the annoyance and all the bad things that can happen with running things on premises. Once you move that to the cloud, you free up all these resources to start developing, you know, new programs, new applications, harnessing big data, for instance, you know, just coming up with all these opportunities really to create revenue, you know, to expand business opportunities. And that's, you know, kind of a fundamental shift in what IT has been all about. And I think that scares a lot of people.
Right.
It's very exciting, though, right?
It should.
A lot of times, IT is seen as the evil force in the company that nobody can stand. You know, if the people on our web team are like that, we just can't stand these people because they're perceived as the blocker to what we want to get done. On a human level, I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? These people can now go from being zeros to heroes in some ways. They can, drive value and not be the blocker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking about that in the context of when we were talking earlier about this, a lot of areas we've gotten this, you know, D to D, right? Data to dollars. We've kind of figured out how to transform data into dollars. And when you can do that, you transform IT from just being a cost center, like, oh, darn, how much do I have to pay, you know, to, wow, I love this IT. Can I spend more? Because the more data we have, whether it's this big data now, analytics or whatever, if it's actually driving business, people are more than willing to spend and compensate people. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the interesting thing, right? So with all these changes, you can take both. So you can take Windows Server 2012 and run it exactly the way you used to run things in the past. It runs great. It's awesome. However, that's sort of like, as someone of the guys was saying, that's sort of like taking a chainsaw and using it like a hacksaw. You know, you can do that, but you know what? If you pull that cord and pull the trigger, boy, there's some amazing things that can go on. That what we've done with the technology is enabled you to be able to do dramatically, you know, get dramatically better results from your investment. And with those dramatic increase benefits to the data center come dramatic increases benefits to you. You know, I've talked to a number of IT pros who talked about, you know, and this was in the context of PowerShell, where they took and used this and were able to do dramatic changes to their data center, and then they got these great compensation. You know, they got promoted. One guy talked to me about having been, you know, kind of steady in his job, you know, get 1-2% raises a year. His boss forced him. He didn't even want to run PowerShell. I don't want to do that. Boss forced him, said, you got to learn this. And then for his annual review, he got a 17% raise. His boss said, oh, you've just been so productive. You've helped us so much. Just wanted to say thank you. Now, here's the interesting thing. Anybody who's ever been a manager realizes that, guess what? You know, pay increases, that's not a variable bucket. Mm-hmm. Every year you get that much.
Right.
So for that guy to get 17% meant the other folks didn't. So point being that, hey, these opportunities to invest in your career, if you can really show dramatic results to the business, you can get, you know, huge benefits as well, personal benefits. And honestly, that's the thing I kind of get jazzed. But I mean, I love the technology, I really do, but I just love making people successful. Mm-hmm. That's just so fun. Like, you want to tell the story? I can tell the story about the email we got today.
Oh, you got to tell that one. This is beautiful.
So Jeff Woolsey was telling the story. Fantastic about, obviously, he started the discussion talking about Katrina and how Katrina, you know, showed a big picture of Katrina, you know, the hurricane. And he said, everybody knew Katrina was coming. And yet a ton of these data centers were just wiped out and had business continuity problems because there was nothing they could do. And so it was that kind of inspired us to say, hey, we need to be able to help people with disaster recovery and be able to move things. And then showed a picture of Sandy, the hurricane that just hit New York, and brought up an email from a customer who talked about how, hey, you know, things are bad here, lots of outages, his wife's car had been hit by a car, everyone was safe, but it was bad. And then what the data center had been, they'd gotten on Windows Server 2012, and they saw this coming, and they moved all the processing from one data center to another data center using Hyper-V Replica. And this is a business that couldn't afford any downtime, and they were running.
They had no downtime. Yeah.
The customer
basically
said,
you know, thank you, Microsoft, for implementing this feature.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
I just love that stuff.
Yeah,
that's fun. I mean, technology's great.
Yeah,
making people successful.
Sure.
So, what are the biggest successes you've seen, or have you seen any?
She's nothing like that. Well, nothing that will beat Sandy, but. No, not yet. I mean, it's early days still on the Windows Server 2012 stuff. I mean, I have it's almost more questions than answers on this stuff. I mean, as we move toward that hybrid model I was talking about, or putting stuff in the cloud, I'm very curious to see how people are implementing Active Directory through Windows Azure and how that's working, and My mind was racing as you folks were talking about that stuff, thinking, you know, this is really interesting. Like, there are so many opportunities to push stuff off to this now, sort of like it was with virtualization when that first started hitting, where it was like, okay, so what am I going to push off? What am I going to virtualize, right? You know, and I'll make these really dense servers. And now it's like, well, now I can take this stuff and I can push it off in the cloud. You know, it's kind of an exciting time because it really seems to be ramping up.
And the flexibility that you can just put something up to Azure, bring it back down when you don't need it anymore, and just kind of spread everything around and make it based on demand, pay as you go. You know, you don't have all these massive expenditures for unused capacity. You know, right. The flexibility is just fantastic, and that, you know, reduces costs, makes you look like a hero, like Paul was saying. And
The other half of that, I think it was Garth who said, you know, we all have this mental model of, you know, you can churn it up as you need more, and that's what's beautiful. It's like turning a switch. And not something you could easily do. I think they used the example of the J.K. Rowling website where they had modeled this hardware and they did all this stuff and they could not meet capacity. So what's the answer? We're going to add, you know, buy more stuff and keep adding on to it. And, you know, you turn it up. And I think we all kind of get that. But, you know, someone made the comment that but you can also turn it down,
right?
Which is really neat because now you're not paying for the services or the hardware or the connectivity, whatever it is, bandwidth, when you're not using it, right? And so it's not just about scaling up. It's also about scaling down, you know, and meeting the demand, whatever it is, as it goes up and down.
Sure. Yeah. I love that story.
Yeah.
What other things should we talk about?
Let's talk about mobile device management. That's the one that's killing me. That, you know, I know you folks have a Windows Intune announced coming soon. I can't wait.
Yes.
You know,
when
on that stuff, but I'll hold off on that.
Let me keep my job. That's good. Great. So, have you been at the Build conference? You attend any of the sessions?
I have not had a minute for any sessions. It's always so disappointing to me. But I will, you know, the nice thing about this kind of thing is that you folks will make the videos available and the downloadable presentations and all that. And I always come home and then spend the full day just downloading everything, you know. So I will.
So you just come virtually in, like cruise the web?
Yeah.
CNN?
Afterwards, yeah. No, that's what I do. I buy
Netflix?
Facebook. Mostly Facebook. Yeah,
okay.
Right. No, I mean, I have meetings and so forth.
Build.
Yeah. We have other Check events it. And so forth, so. It's been kind of back-to-back. Well, you know, we did our session here, we're doing this, and, you know, so now it's almost dinner time, and I have an hour to kill, finally, in the day, so that's kind of how the days go, but I'll enjoy the actual show virtually after the fact, despite the fact that I'm here all week.
Gotcha. Did you see everybody's running around with these surfaces?
Yeah. People seem excited about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hardware giveaways are always good, but those devices are, the stuff they're giving away this year is so awesome, you know, a Surface tablet, a Nokia Lumia 920, 100 gigabytes free SkyDrive, which you can't actually care about, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, John, thanks for joining us, and I really enjoyed our talk and this session, and I hope everybody enjoys all the Build videos. As Paul mentioned, they're all available online, so go watch them and have a blast.
Thanks.